Hello, rich girls. Welcome back to Old Money, the podcast to help you build the trust funds you wish you were born with. I'm your host, Amber Evenson, and I'm so thrilled for this episode. You guys, if you don't like Real Housewives, if you don't like reality television, I get it. That's not your thing. But for me, my thing is this: the sociology of wealth. And that is why I'm so obsessed with all of these reality TV shows, because this episode is diving into the things we all love to judge, whether it's the people we see on TikTok, the people we see on Bravo, or the people we see at our own country clubs. This episode is all about the difference between performing wealth versus actually building it. And we're gonna talk about why you can smell it from a mile away when somebody is being inauthentic. And the other piece of this, and a little bit of self-reflection, is gently tapping our own selves on the shoulder to see when we get over our skis, so to speak, when we are building the dream, building the wardrobe, building the home. When are we building from a place of exhaustion versus being authentic to ourselves about why we're actually trying to build wealth? Are we responding to our nervous system or to our perceived identity? We're talking all about it today. So I'm going to break it down for you like this. We're going to talk about what performing wealth actually looks like. And I'm using real specific examples from people that you know that you are going to recognize immediately. We're going to talk about the antithesis of that, which is what it actually looks like to build wealth. And then the one question to wrap it all up that will tell you exactly where you are. Stay to the end for shout outs and a waitlist announcement if you haven't gotten in on it yet. I'm excited. Let's jump in. Okay, so let's get into the conversation around performance, the drama, the theater, all of the things that we see on reality television. And this has been actually playing out on very recent episodes of Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. I'm obsessed with this conversation because I am, and people are, extremely sensitive to authenticity signals around wealth, even though you can't even put your finger on it. You can't articulate why, you just get the ick. Why is that? We're taking in a mix of psychology, social signaling, and most importantly, cultural literacy. So when we talk about acting rich versus being rich, Real Housewives is the perfect place to start. If you haven't been watching the season of Beverly Hills, it's okay, it's kind of a snore. I totally get it. And I believe I talked about this already, forgive me if I did, but you know, all these women, they go on a trip to Italy, they go and stay in this incredible villa, it's she, amazing. And it's the first day that they're there, by the way. I don't know if you've ever flown over to Europe and then tried to be normal on the first day that you're there, but I'm basically a drunk toddler. You are so messed up from the jet lag, like looking through beer goggles, don't even know which way is up. And here they go straight into a dinner. But before dinner, there's a surprise opera show. It was so chic that it's like in this house, there's a theater, it's that type of villa. And one of the characters, Bose, calls out. She goes, if these women don't appreciate opera, then they don't have any class. And so sure enough, the producers zoom in on the youngest one on the cast, Amanda Francis. You've heard me talk about her before, looking at her phone, looking absolutely bored. And then Sutton, who's this supposed Southern belle with zero Southern charm, also looking like she'd rather be anywhere else. And that, for me, was a very thin attempt by Bose to create hierarchy in the group. Because the reality is, not everybody who has money likes opera. That's just not true. That is one of those wealth signals that I think people lean on to differentiate themselves in a way that makes them feel superior. I'll give you another example. Art. Some people really appreciate modern art or graffiti art or classical art. And to go to somebody and say, oh, if you don't appreciate going to Art Basel every year, you don't really have money, honey. But some people just don't care about art. They rather spend their millions of dollars on things like dinosaur fossils. Did you know there is, I think, 2,500 dinosaur fossils that are over 70 to 80% complete. So they're like a full fossil, like a stegosaurus. And that is part of the art trade right now, you guys. Like, people are trading these things. There's this huge warehouse in Singapore where I saw a tour on CNN of getting this super behind the scenes tour. Sorry, this is a quick offshoot. Super behind the scenes tour of this huge, it's like a safety deposit box place, but the safety deposit boxes are like tens of thousands of square feet where people store all of their art and their artifacts and all of the things, their wine, their jewels, all the things that they want to keep super safe and under lockdown. And this one guy took CNN in to show that he's listing his Stegosaurus fossil for sale for $5.5 million. And I'm like, what? This is so crazy. Here's my point. Not everybody likes the same things. Performing wealth is not about pretending to like opera. It's not about pretending to like art, because we're also watching Yellowstone right now. And if you're John Dutton, you don't give a fuck about a Stegosaurus, or you don't give a fuck about owning a Jackson Pollock painting. You care about owning your land and owning horses. I digress. The difference between performing wealth and calling people out on not liking the quote unquote wealthy things, that's not what we're talking about here. That for me is thin, and that was a cheap shot by Bose to try to separate herself from people that she thinks less of. What I'm thinking about around performing wealth is more about the conversation we can see with Dorit. Dorit is going through this horrible divorce. She has no idea how much money is in her savings accounts or her retirement accounts, if she even has a retirement account. And then she goes and spends $4,000 in one sitting at Love Shack Fancy in the Hamptons. Or she finally gets a book advance and then she blows $11,000 of it on a mini Kelly that's like so important to her. If you just got a book advance and you're worried about supporting your children and paying your mortgage, don't you think the mini Kelly can wait? What she's doing is she's performing wealth by buying the status symbols that will get her attention in those circles. It has just come out in the news that her $6.5 million Encino mansion is in pre-foreclosure with multiple lenders. That means they don't have a regular mortgage where you pay the bill to one place every single month. It means that they've taken out multiple mortgages against the equity on that home, and they have over $850,000 in loan defaults to multiple different people that they've taken loans out from because they're not paying the bills. According to her, her ex-husband stopped paying the mortgage. And so my point is this: how do you think Dorit's nervous system is? Do you think she is spending money at Love Shack Fancy in good faith, feeling really good about those purchases, or is she being avoidant? Can she actually afford it? Why would she continue to spend lavishly on her wardrobe when her financial life is a mess, when she's saying things like, oh, PK handled everything, I have no idea where everything is, I'm in the unknown? Because she has such a dysregulated nervous system, and her whole identity is wrapped up in how other people perceive her. She's the fashion girl. She wants to be perceived as fashionable and chic, right? I'm gonna give you another example. If you've seen this person on TikTok, raise your hand. Her name is Shelby Sapp. You might know her because she drives, in my opinion, the ugliest car I've ever seen in my life. It is a pink and white G-Wagon. I just can't. I just think it is so not beautiful as a car. Cars are supposed to be beautiful and sleek and beautiful. This one is not that. Shelby Sapp is a sales trainer. She has a course where she trains women on how to be successful in sales. I believe she started with pest control sales, going door to door, and she started her empire by recording TikToks in her car about how she was closing deals because of her sales techniques. She's big, just like the Jordan Belfort of Wolf of Wall Street. Sell me this pen. She's pretty compelling as a character. Am I saying she's wealthy or not? I don't know. I don't know what her personal finances are, but her energy to me, and again, this is that me being extremely sensitive around wealth signals and cultural literacy and social signaling, I don't know what her bank account looks like. I don't know what her investment accounts look like. Maybe she's fine financially, but she is still performing wealth. So let's give her the benefit of the doubt and tell, let's say she's super wealthy. Let's say she's got $10 million invested and $5 million liquid. She's fine. She's happy. She can have her car. I don't care. Regardless of what her bank account looks like, she's still performing wealth because everything she talks about is about what she buys. Again, on the nervous system regulation, if you are in a group of women who are constantly going out to dinner dressing up, and everybody always has the newest pair of Amina Muadi shoes. Everybody always has the newest Balmain collection from this last season, Amanda Francis, at that party. If everybody's always going out and flexing on those things, you're going to always have to be in a position of performing wealth or performing literacy around whatever it is that group of friends cares about. On TikTok, what gets clicks is performing wealth as it relates to cars and jewelry and doing a Birkin haul or whatever it is. And so when you're always performing, you're always chasing, you're never going to rest. We see this also, if you know who Tara's World is, you guys, I fell into a Tara's World rabbit hole because I thought, here's this girl on TikTok. How interesting. She's just a regular looking girl and she goes on cruises by herself. I love to see inside of a cruise ship. I'm not a cruiser. I'm not going to go on a cruise, but I find it so interesting how there's such an ecosystem on a cruise ship. And then I found out later she was an OnlyFans girl. I had no idea. I was like, oh, what a nice girl. Had no idea. She is an OnlyFans girl. She built like 5 million followers on TikTok posting this luxury lifestyle content that she created from blowing up on OnlyFans. However, OnlyFans or internet fame is fleeting. She would have the cars, the clothes, the vibe. She bought this huge home in Beverly Hills. And then maybe this is clickbait, maybe it's real. She's gone on TikTok now and been telling her followers that she's struggling to pay her mortgage and that she could potentially lose her house. And she's now monetizing her financial crisis as her content. It's so cringe to me. She's performing wealth identity and it's tuned into her performance and her content is the wealth that she's created, but there's nothing underneath it. The minute the content stops, she doesn't have anything else to support her. When her content stops, her money stops. There's no foundation there. So again, it feels very thin. Her performative wealth is very thin. This is not a judgment of her. And get your bag however you want to get it. This is just an observation about what happens when performing wealth becomes your entire business model and you've never built any architecture underneath it. If you have 5 million followers on TikTok and you can't pay your mortgage because you ballooned so big at the beginning of your career that you overpurchased and now you can't maintain, it's a distribution problem and a financial architecture problem. So I can imagine that she is completely dysregulated. So when you start noticing these wealth signals, whether it's on television or social media or in your friend group, for me, it starts to repel me like a magnet. Like, you know, when you put two magnets together from your fridge on the wrong side and they just like bounce away from one another. That's how it feels for me with people's energies because I can tell that there is this undercurrent of hustle, of chasing, of performance, and it's not a calm authenticness. I can also spend time around people who are not wealthy, who are very wealthy, and they're just at a level of ease, and the conversation, the signals, nothing around it feels like pressure or performance. The reason for this is because people don't detect wealth. You can't look at somebody walking down the street and be like, that person's wealthy, that person's not. Just look at the tech founders that are walking around in black hoodies and on running shoes. There's probably a Midwestern dad walking around in a black hoodie and on running shoes right now, and he probably doesn't have the same wealth as Sam Altman. It's not about detecting wealth. It's not about looking at people's signals. It's not about, oh, that person likes opera. It's about congruence. What does congruence mean? Congruence means that your behavior, your language, your comfort level, your choices, your energy all align naturally. Nothing feels out of place. When someone is authentic, everything about them fits. But when somebody is performing wealth, things might feel slightly off and you really can't put your finger on it. You can't articulate why. Maybe the clothes look expensive, but they're not tailored. Or the clothes are wearing the person, the person's not wearing the clothes. Or maybe their language sounds rehearsed. If you're watching Ladies of London right now and you see Kimmy, who slips in and out of having a long A because she goes on a walk and then a walk, you know, like her language, it's phony, it's fake. But at the same time, Dorit has that same issue. Madonna had that same issue. It just sounds like they're trying to put on somebody else's affect. It feels slightly off. Or maybe their confidence feels forced. Maybe they're coming out super strong and it's like, okay, it's not appropriate for the moment. Or they have lifestyle choices that feel like they're for an audience. People might not consciously think that this person is quote unquote faking wealth, but they feel the mismatch. Humans are incredibly good at pattern recognition. In fact, you're probably better at pattern recognition than you even know. And you don't even recognize it, especially women, I find, are very good at pattern recognition. And you might not even know that you're good at this. Like, here's an example of, you know, when you're driving and you go into like flow state, you're like, how did I even get home? And when you're driving, maybe you're driving down a long stretch of road and there's multiple stoplights. And instead of like speeding up and slamming on the brakes every time you know there's gonna be a red light, you kind of relax your pacing on the accelerator so you can kind of flow better. You've recognized the pattern of the streetlights naturally, and you kind of just fit into the groove. That's ease and congruence with the pacing of the stoplights. Or here's another example. For my luxury lovers out there, seeing a handbag that you've experienced in person, maybe you own it, whatever, it's a designer handbag, and then you see somebody carrying a knockoff, and you don't even look at it twice, but you know the Louis Vuittons are not the Louis Vuitton logos on that bag, or they're upside down in the wrong way, or the handles are too long. You can just spot it so quickly because you're so familiar with the real thing that when you see something that's not right, you can't even articulate exactly why it's wrong. You just know it's a fake. My point is that pattern recognition is so prevalent with people as well, their behavior. And so when you pick up on incongruencies with people between their behavior, their language, the way they hold their body, the things that they talk about, their choices in conversation or their choices in life, you pick up on this incongruence, and that's where you can sense the inconsistency between their true identity and performance. Same thing with old money signals versus performed wealth signals. Authentic wealth, especially generational wealth, it tends to signal itself through ease and restraint, not necessarily display. So a good example of this is, again, if you're watching Ladies of London, Mark Francis, he comes from a world where money was readily available to him, and he lives in this lavish home full of antiques. He's an antique dealer. Of course, his home looks very flashy, but he's very comfortable in it. Or Emma, the woman who lives in like a castle. We see that on next week's episode, or if you're listening to this, I think it's going to be this week's episode, of taking all of these people into a storied place of heritage and family and crests and all the things. She feels very at ease there. How do you become at ease? Practice, repetition, exposure. These people grew up in circles and in homes where these manners and customs and things became normalized. Versus the character on the show, Micah, who is a precious gem of a human, by the way. She's so sweet. She's American. She moved over to England and felt completely fish out of water because she didn't know any of the etiquette. And she's a little clunky. She's got a heart of gold. She's got so much, I don't know, gumption. She's just a sweetheart. I think she's such a nice character. And she doesn't have this practiced smoothness around everything. She's a little bit eyes wide open, and she's had to really learn. But you can tell that she's learned to move in the space versus all of these other people who have been exposed to this their whole life, and they're moving through the spaces naturally. Those spaces might be going to an estate in, you know, the south of France, or in this case in, you know, rural England, or a very fancy restaurant, or travel, or conversation where etiquette feels normal. Just in any environment, they know how to act. I've had a couple of awkward instances before going to really nice restaurants where, you know, when you sit down, they pull out your chair and then they scoot you in, which I hate, by the way, because I'm always wearing heels and I need to scoot in farther, and then I lose my balance, and they're like scooting your chair in and you're like struggling to stay upright. And then they'll take your napkin and lay it on your lap. And I've been to some restaurants where they lay the napkin on my partner's lap and then they take mine away. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And then they bring back, because I was wearing black pants instead of white pants, they bring a black napkin instead of a white one so that it matches better with my outfit. I mean, for me, that was new exposure and it didn't feel normal at all. I didn't have any fluency in that environment. But if you've been going to restaurants like that since you were a toddler, you're probably totally okay with it. The other thing with that too is that with this quiet luxury, old money signal, there's no urgency to prove status. There's just ease. So going back to Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Amanda Francis walks into Dorit's book cover launch party. She's wearing a cute outfit. Doesn't fit her very well, but it's a cute outfit. And it's a book party, so she's wearing this outfit that has, it looks like lines written on it. Like you're writing a script and then there's some lines, like it's lined a piece of paper. And it's perfect for the event. Somebody compliments her on it. And instead of saying, oh yeah, thank you, I wore it to honor the theme or our hostess for the evening, she says, oh, thanks. It's balm on like summer, winter last year, I think. That's not what we asked. We didn't ask what the designer was or what season it was from. You just got a compliment around your outfit. It could have been from Zara. It doesn't matter. You didn't need to prove status right there. You didn't need to prove that it was designer. What you needed to do was just take the compliment and, you know, say, thank you so much. I love this outfit. This whole old money versus new money performing wealth is like quality over flash. It's longevity over trends. And because of this, authentic wealth very rarely feels performative. Again, it's hard to articulate, but when you're around it, you can feel it. Tell me if you relate. So if we can smell this from a mile away, why do people do this? Why do people continue to perform wealth or try to show off what they have? Why do people continue to lead with the thinnest remarks around how much this cost or where they got this or where they've been versus trying to connect with others? Mostly, the motivation comes from identity insecurity. Let's do a quick exercise here. We talk about building wealth all the time, unabashedly. Like, I'm such a big fan of getting rich. When I ask people, why do you want to be wealthy? Well, if you're a listener of Old Money, you probably know the answer to this. But I think a lot of people would say, you know, if somebody asks them, why are you working so hard? They would say, oh, well, I want to travel the world and I want to have a nice home and a nice car and I want to, you know, enjoy my Chanel bag collection. And actually, if you're on TikTok or social media right now, there's a trend going around where there's three pictures on a slideshow. And the first slide is a picture of like a before picture. And it is this vision of a person all put together or going to work, whatever. And it has three goals on it. And the goals might be something like make director, get a bunch of money, travel the world. And then the second picture on that slide shows something that changed them. And what I'm seeing are some things that are quite tragic, like maybe they lost a family member or they went through some sort of health challenge. Like there's a picture that's in my head right now of a woman who you can see her getting chemotherapy. And then the third picture is them after that event that changed them. And they're a totally different person visually. And now the three things on their to-do list or their goals list is spend time with the people that I love, live fully in integrity, and I don't know, hug my kids every single day. And it's that realignment of priorities. The performative piece of wealth is what happens before the transformation. What Tony Robbins always said is, how can we have transformation without you having to hit rock bottom? Hitting rock bottom is very painful. Why don't we just decide to make the transformation without us having to hit rock bottom? And I fucking love that. It's a decision. It's why you're listening to the Old Money podcast. It's why you're trying to understand mindset, motivation, emotional regulation, all the things. Because the real thing that happens when we're building wealth, and the reason why we're also driven to build wealth, is actually from a lot of times a subconscious belief that when we have the money, we will have the thing that we believe money will give us. When I have the wealth, I will have the status. I will be appreciated. I will be accepted. I will be loved. I will be safe. All of these are base core needs that we are trying to fulfill. And that's why a lot of us are truly chasing the wealth, because we think that when I carry the Chanel bag, I will be accepted. I will be admired. When I have the G-Wagon, I will feel safe. I will feel strong. All of these underlying reasons are why we're all so motivated to pursue wealth. But a lot of us do that unconsciously. And then we get the wealth and we're like, why am I still unhappy? Because that's the punchline, you guys. That's the punchline to this whole process. When you get the wealth, nothing changes unless you change, which is why I don't want you to hit rock bottom. I don't want you to hate making the money. I don't want you to get to the top of your mountain and still be fucking miserable. That's exactly why All Money Podcast exists, so that we can enjoy the ride. We can be conscious of what we're going after, conscious of why we're doing it, and then be in the flow of building a life that has resources and conscious choice, so we don't grind our way to the top, so to speak, and then we get there and we're so burnt out we can't even enjoy it. The value of having wealth is having resources and freedom and time and relationships and autonomy and agency over who we spend our time with and where we spend our time, or all those things. But when you get back to somebody who's performing wealth, their motivation is coming from an identity insecurity. They're unconscious of the reasons why they are buying things, doing things, saying things. Identity insecurity has common drivers. Some of them are status anxiety, wanting to be perceived as successful. They want other people to look at them and admire them. Or belonging pressure, trying to gain access to certain social circles and acceptance. Compensation, overcompensation, using luxury items or experiences to mask their insecurities. Or external validation. That's a big one. Needing others to confirm their worth. I told you we just started watching, or just finished rather, Yellowstone. And the character Jamie on the show, I won't give you any spoilers if you haven't watched it, but Jamie, the brother, his whole life is external validation. That external validation causes him to act totally irrationally so many times, but he wants to be perceived as a strong attorney general. He wants to be the governor. He wants to be accepted. He wants to be this. He wants to be that. Instead of leaning into what his actual identity is, he's always looking to others to confirm his worth because he doesn't feel like he has any internally. Now, could that be John Dutton's fault? Yeah, 100%, but that's not what I'm talking about here. External validation is one of the core drivers of people to have identity insecurity because they haven't done the work to figure out that they are valuable on their own. This type of performance becomes like social theater. Instead of living wealth, people are staging wealth. And there are subtle behavioral patterns that you're probably picking up on for people that you know, that you're like, something doesn't smell right here. One of those things is over-explanation, talking about money, status, or luxury too often. It's the thing that's rubbing everybody wrong on Real Housewives about Amanda Francis when she's mentioning her brands or her Chanel backpack or constantly referencing how hard she works or how busy she is. This over-explanation, oh, I'm the breadwinner, I'm this, I'm that. It's rubbing people the wrong way. Hypervisible consumption, when that becomes the centerpiece of identity, it becomes, look what I have, instead of, I enjoy this, and that's Dorit. Social media signaling, when you have wealth displayed as proof rather than a byproduct of life, now you're in this Shelby Sapp, Tara's World type of identity, like cars, designer labels, VIP access, expensive dinners, all the things. And then the last piece of this too is the lack of cultural ease. Authentic wealth has social literacy because there's exposure to these different environments and people and customs. So somebody performing wealth may have expensive things, but feel awkward or look awkward in elite spaces. And that mismatch creates friction that we pick up on and don't trust. Performing wealth repels people. Performing wealth triggers this negative reaction in you and me when we see it online, on television, because it signals insecurity. People intuitively feel when somebody is trying to prove something, and confidence doesn't need proof. It violates status norms because in most elite environments, excessive display is considered unsophisticated. the rule normally is it's like the more secure your wealth is, the less visible the signaling. This is the whole trope of people living on the East Coast and everybody has a broken down Volvo, right? And then the other piece is that it feels manipulative. When wealth becomes a tool to influence perception, people feel like they're being managed rather than engaged with authentically. That's why people are saying, like Amanda Francis is like, look, I fit in. Look, I do this. Look, I wear the Balmain t-shirt. Yeah, but Amanda, you didn't come with the Balmain custom dress of your face like Jennifer Tilly is doing at the reunion. There's a difference. There's access to everything, but the performative nature of it all rubs people the wrong way. And humans dislike being manipulated or being managed or feeling like somebody has to prove something. So if she could have related to the women on raising her children, you know, working and having a family or any other thing that felt a little bit more, you know, focused on the true value of being a human versus the things that she has, the house that she bought, et cetera. Like, you guys realize that's the only thing that she has in common with the group is that she bought Kyle's house. She purchased her entry to the group. Now, I know I feel like I'm ragging on Amanda Francis. I'm not meaning to. In fact, I admire her business so much. She has been a marketing machine for years upon years upon years, and I've been watching her, and it's honestly a feat, and good on her. Like, I am not yucking her yums at all. I'm just explaining why sociologically people cannot stand her. It's why people are so triggered by her. And in a minute, I'm going to show you exactly what building wealth actually looks like from the inside out, because the contrast is going to make everything we just talked about feel completely different. But let's look at one more little case study, another building wealth contrast here. We've got somebody who's been branded as a rich kid, literally two people rather, and they have shown up on social media in such an unapologetic, abashed way that you have to admire it. And these two people are Morgan Stewart McGraw and Dorothy Wang. I'm literally obsessed with both of these women, both of them, because of a sociological cultural impact. Morgan Stewart from Rich Kids of Beverly Hills grew up in Beverly Hills and came from a very prominent family. Her father was a construction magnate. So she genuinely came from money, real generational money, which means that she had exposure early on, which gave her a nervous system baseline around wealth that most people just don't get access to. And then instead of just living off of inheritance, she built a lifestyle blog that became a brand. I was just watching a podcast interview with Justin Sylvester, the Lady Sitter, and his host and Morgan Stewart was on, and they were talking about how the show Rich Kids of Beverly Hills like came to be. The backstory is so cute. Dorothy Wang and Morgan Stewart McGraw were really the stars of the show. They're just these two young women who were so quippy, who were so in this wealthy life that they could be bratty and funny and irreverent and say the things that were a little offensive and out of touch, but it was just authentic to them. And that's why people gravitated to them so much. And like I said, instead of living off of her family money, Morgan Stewart started her lifestyle blog, Boobs and Lubes, and then continued to go on to a TV hosting career that she earned on E! Because she's funny. She earned that, and she's so authentic. She's just herself. She had Morgan Stewart Sport. She has now her new clothing line, Wrangly, because she's a fashion icon. And she married Jordan McGraw, who is Dr. Phil's son, which adds a whole nother layer of generational wealth infrastructure around her. And through it all, she's been transparent. She's been employed. She's been relatable. She's been funny, but she's been authentic. She doesn't just have more money than these characters on the shows. It's that her lifestyle is just an expression of who she is, not proof of who she's trying to be. There is no gap between her image and her reality. She's just the same. And Dorothy Wang, who we've also seen, and she's been on Rich Kids of Beverly Hills and also Bling Empire, and she is from, I mean, massive amounts of money, like Asian money, and I don't know exactly what her company, I think it was like a telecom company, what her family started, But I mean, talk about like the movie Crazy Rich Asians. Like that's the Dorothy Wang lifestyle. And she just married this adorable man. He's Jewish. He converted to Judaism. They had a traditional Chinese ceremony and a traditional Jewish ceremony at their wedding in Italy. And it's just authentic. It is not performative. It was actually so much more private than she's ever been before because she doesn't have anything to prove. She doesn't have anything to prove. Now, are their lifestyles boring? Not at all. But building authentic wealth often looks really boring from the outside. What we see displayed on social media is the outward expression. What we need to do on the inside is the work that actually builds the money. If you want to be like Scrooge McDuck, diving into your pool of all of your coins and swimming in it, this is what you need. Routine, stability, private consumption, and long-term thinking. Most truly wealthy people are not photographing their lifestyle. I mean, Rich Kids of Beverly Hills, they talk about it on the podcast I was listening to. That was a cultural phenomenon because it was just when the rich kids of Instagram were blowing up and Dorothy Wang was really at the center of this. This was the first time we ever saw young people massively displaying their access to private jets and private tables at Longarit in south of France and all the things. It was the first time we had ever seen that. But most wealthy people are not posting on Instagram. They're not talking about money. They're not trying to sell you anything. And they're not changing their identity based on purchases. Their wealth is structural, not performative. And for me, it's so interesting. I'm like, okay, sometimes I have this like little identity hiccup where I'm like, what am I doing? I'm literally talking about money all day long. I'm talking about wealth culture, the sociology of money, because I'm fascinated by it. And I just think we can normalize talking about it so much. But like, what am I trying to do? Like, I have courses for sale. Yeah. And we have a ton of women enrolled in my old money mindset and old money method. But I'm purposefully not showcasing my life on social media. I run a business. I work so much. I love my work. I also have this as basically a part-time job, but you don't know what kind of car I drive. You don't know where I live. You don't know what my investment accounts look like. You don't know when I take an owner's distribution because I'm not here to perform my wealth. I don't have anything to prove. The resources are there if you want to know, and you can tell me or you can see me or you can listen to me on the podcast. Like, I'm calm. I'm definitely very conscientious about money, but I'm enjoying the wealth that I'm building. I'm not performing it. Enjoying wealth is personal, it's quiet, and it's internal satisfaction. Performing wealth is public, it's attention seeking, and it's dependent on audience reaction. And one thing I'll say about myself is I've never needed external validation for anything. I have been very lucky. I was born without the gene that gives a fuck what anybody thinks of them. And I know that that is a privilege. I just really don't care. And the reality is like Justin and I make decisions in our lives that fit our lifestyle from a really regulated place. Like if we were really focused on telling everybody what we're doing, how successful, we would have two flashy cars and a big flashy house and all the things. But we've made conscious decisions to live a life that feels authentic to us, that gives us flexibility so that we can travel and we can save for our future. And ironically, the strongest signal of wealth is not luxury for us. It's the ease. It's the connection. It's the lack of urgency. It's the freedom from signaling. We don't need to convince anyone of anything. No matter where you are in your wealth building journey, this could show up. If you just got your first 100K job and you chain yourself to those golden handcuffs, you are signaling. If you have to buy the thing to show people that you got the job, that's how you get trapped. I don't want you to get trapped. I don't want you to be like Dorit and not know that you, if you have your investment account for your retirement or how you're going to pay your bills. The quiet luxury aesthetic that has taken over the internet in the past 5 years is a direct cultural reaction to watching people perform wealth and having it collapse. And I don't think what people are responding to is the cashmere or the chicness of, you know, the Carolyn Bessette Kennedy. It's the energy of not needing to prove anything. That energy is a nervous system state, not a Calvin Klein wardrobe. So how do we get to be the wealthy woman? This is the thing that we talked about in episode 140, the wealthy woman. She still spends. She still has the beautiful things. She still lives well. The difference is entirely internal. The performing wealth woman buys the designer bag to feel wealthy, to show others that she's wealthy, to be admired by others. The building wealth woman buys a designer bag because she is wealthy and the bag is just a bag. Same bag, completely different transaction. Think about buying a Himalayan Birkin bag with diamond encrusted and palladium hardware. That bag can cost $150,000. What is $150,000 to you versus what is $150,000 to Kim Kardashian? To Kim Kardashian, it's a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of her wealth. For you, it's a big percentage of your net worth, right? It's a completely different transaction. The practical move is to start kind of closing the gaps here, not all at once, but like one gap at a time, knowing your net worth, having financial conversations with yourself before investing in things so that you know what percentage of wealth you're giving to this. And then, you know, the identity move is stop letting the aesthetic be what you present with and stop letting the aesthetic be your calling card. Your wealth is not a performance that needs an audience. Like, I'm sorry, but like my wealth is, I see it in websites, in my accounts. You know what I'm saying? The foundation needs to be solid. So the question to carry into this week, I think for all of us is there anywhere that I'm spending to feel wealthy instead of from feeling wealthy? For me, the biggest piece of this, and I talk a lot about this in Old Money Mindset course, is when I was especially younger and I was really unhealthy in my body, I was really unhealthy in my mind. Every weekend, I was panic shopping to try to find an outfit that I would feel confident in. And I was going and spending not just Forever 21, but I was going to Nordstrom and buying brand new designer jeans and t-shirts because I felt so insecure that the feeling of the newness would cover up how I didn't feel worthy because I felt like everything that I already had wasn't good enough to get me accepted, wasn't good enough to get me male attention. It wasn't good enough to make me look good. I just felt so low in myself. And then that spending habit became a crutch for me. Every time I'd go to spend, I would overspend because everything I was buying, I was trying to fix myself with. I'd overspend at Target on random beauty stuff because I thought I need all of this to look better, be accepted because I didn't accept myself. So there are ways that all of us at any income level can perform and can buy and can consume and can share in a way that doesn't really feel authentic. And looking back at my energy at that time, what I was putting out and the type of people that I attracted were people that were as insecure as me. I was not coming out and giving off this energy of like, oh, wow, she has great fashion sense. It was just, I have new stuff all the time. I was insecure. Not any amount of True Religion jeans could cover up the fact that I was insecure. So what did I attract? Other insecure people that were not good partners for me or not good friends for me. So listen, the most powerful social signal is not wealth. It's the absence of needing people to know that you have it. Because the moment wealth starts becoming a performance, whether you have it or not, because now we can perform wealth on credit cards, it stops becoming power and starts becoming a costume. And in the next episode, we're going to talk about how to actually reverse this. And the solution is not just like taking a vacation. It's learning how to regulate your nervous system in a way that restores capacity across all five areas of wealth. How to dig into the thing that we talked about earlier. Why are we building wealth? What are the things that we think wealth is going to give us that it's actually not going to give us at all, but we can give ourselves and we can give it today. We can give it to ourselves today without ever having to hit rock bottom, without having to overextend to make the quote unquote amount of money that we think we need to have or the amount of weight we need to lose. Do you know what I mean? If you're the type of person like I was, like, oh, when I lose this 15 pounds, like I'll finally be happy, I'll finally be accepted. That's not how it works. We're going to break down some practical strategies that are going to help you and that helped me shift my body out of survival mode and back into a state where it is healthy and it's clear and it's focused on connection and authenticity. So productivity can actually return like naturally. You don't have to force it. You don't have to be super disciplined. This can be a devotion. This can be easy. And the reason it's easy is because there are systems. When we set the systems around preventing this from happening to us again. And I'm telling you from experience, my bounce back rate, so much better. I recognize so much sooner when I'm reaching burnout because I have systems in place that help me and tools to deal with life when it gets really rocky, because I still get into that insecure place and I still get triggered and I still have my core wounds of not feeling safe and I lash out at my husband and he doesn't deserve that. But I don't get completely spun out now. We don't get into fights that last for days and I don't get completely dysregulated and feel like I have to run from my life. I was doing that. Because I finally recognized how to regulate myself, and this is not just about shaking out your arms and feeling less anxious, like really digging into the core wounds I had around money and also my identity, my entire life has gotten better. My relationship is stronger than ever. My bank account is stronger than ever. My business is stronger than ever. It's like, so when I say that and it's just general, it's like, what does that mean? Well, it means like, I don't feel insecure anymore. So I don't undercharge. I don't allow bad employees to stay on our team. I hold a higher standard. I'm not a people pleaser anymore. I'm not codependent with people, with whether it's team members or clients or my partner or my family or my friends. My body used to be running on a stress response all the time. And it was completely eroding my health, my quality of relationships, my purpose. When I was at work, I was like a disaster. My time was gone. My money was gone. But now being regulated, the success compounds in every area. And the reason I love this episode is because the sociology, the study of and watching and observing other people, yeah, with a little bit of judgment, let's be real. Like, I'm a judging bitch. So yes, I'm judging, but that's part of the sport, right? Of reality TV. But observing other people helps us become more aware of our own patterns. It really does. It's like, oh, like, would I ever say something so cringe? Maybe I would. You know what I mean? The real question becomes not about performing well, but about how can I become more authentic to me? And how can I train my nervous system to operate in a way that is authentic to where I am? Old Money Mindset is opening at the end of this month at the biggest discount. I'm going to do it just one time this year. And everything we talk about in this little series that we've been going through since Jessica came on about nervous system regulation is all what we rewire inside the course. So if you want early access and the biggest early bird discount, there is a link in the show notes for you. Before we go, shout outs really quick. Just remember, I see every review, every DM, every share, every email. I have one woman I want to celebrate this week. And the reason you're on my mind is because this is a big reveal. We're packing, we're moving, you guys. I have so much to tell you about. We're not just like moving house, like we're doing a big ass move. I'm going to tell you about it. But I was packing and I found this beautiful box of Tiffany crystal glass champagne flutes. And they were a gift from a beautiful girl, Delisha Watson, who also responded to the last installment of Old Money Monthly when I asked you guys, what are you watching? Well, my girl came through. She said, well, two things actually. She said she's going to check out Claude, and I'm the second person that she has heard mentioning Dictating to Whisper Flow. You guys, I literally have Whisper Flow on my desktop right now as I'm recording this. I'm so obsessed. This will change your relationship with work. I have gotten so much more productive and so much less tired from the insane amount of output that I'm doing because of Whisper Flow. It's different than talk to text just into your phone or your computer. It's changing my life. Okay, so Delisha loves Whisper Flow and I watch Whisper Flow, but here's what she says. She is watching Elsbeth and Matlock on Paramount Plus and she just finished Virgin River on Netflix. So those are your recommendations from one of the classiest women that I know. Delisha, thank you so much for our beautiful champagne glasses and thank you so much for being a part of this community. Shout out to you. Love you so much. If you want to be shouted out, leave a review on Apple Podcasts or DM me on Instagram. Tell me which episode you've been listening to, what's hitting the hardest. I read every single thing. A reminder, the waitlist for Old Money Mindset is open right now. Again, that's an early bird discount, early access, and bonuses for women on the early bird list. The link is in the show notes. If you're ready to stop performing wealth and start building it from the inside out, this is where you're going to start with your mindset, with your energy, all the things. Next week, we're going to talk about something that I think is one of the most underrated competitive advantages in wealth building, and it has nothing to do with strategy or information. It has everything to do with calm. Specifically, why calm women win financially and why it is not a personality type, it's a skill. and it's one of the most important ones you can build. Okay. I will see you guys next week. Love you. Bye.